Scripture reading today is from the book of Ruth, the first chapter beginning with verse number 3. Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with just her two sons. These sons took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. And when they had all lived about 10 years in that land, both of the sons, Mahlon and Chilion, also died. So that the woman Naomi was left without her two sons or her husband. Then she started to return with her daughters-in-law to her own land, away from the country of Moab, for she had heard that the Lord had consideration for the people of Israel and given them food. So she set out from the place where she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to go back to the land of Judah. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find security, each of you, in the house of your husband." And she kissed them, and they wept aloud. And they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Do I still have sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way. For I am too old to have a husband. And even if I should have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you then wait until they were grown? Would you then refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, it's been far more bitter for me than for you, because the hand of the Lord is turned against me." And they wept aloud again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth, the other daughter-in-law, clung to her. So Naomi said, "Your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not press me to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. And may the Lord do thus and so to me, and more as well, even if death parts me from you." The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. I do not believe I have ever enjoyed reading a book of the Bible as much as I enjoyed reading the short book of Ruth this past week. It's only about 5 pages long, doesn't take long to read, but when I finished, I felt a deep sense of joy and hope. It has been, for all of us who've been watching the news, a hard week. At the beginning of the week, somebody sent me a video of the Ethiopian plane crash. I watched the plane come down, and somebody had been taking FaceTime inside the plane as the plane was going down, and how difficult that was to watch and to know that tragedy. And then later in the week, in New Zealand, a white supremacist walks into a mosque where people are worshiping, and the death count is now at 50. Reading the news, North Korea is going back to its old ways of belligerence and talking about getting nuclear again. And just when you think the meanness coming out of Washington, D.C. can't get any worse, it does. And the weather patterns, there's clearly something going on with climate change, whatever you think is causing it. And we're finding ourselves more and more troubled and more threatened by the things that are happening there. On a personal level, Jay and I had a joy this past week because we have the birth of a new granddaughter up in Naperville. But only hours after she was born, we got word that Jay's dad in China was hit by a van and almost killed while he was riding his bicycle on the way to a park to do exercises with his friends. He's doing better, but still not entirely out of the woods yet. And so when I picked up the book of Ruth, it turned out I needed it. I needed its gentleness and its joy. And I needed to hear about its main character, Ruth. Now, whoever arranged the books of the Bible and whatever in the arrangement that they are in knew exactly where to put the book of Ruth, because it comes after the book of Judges, and we talked about the book of Judges last week. And the book of Judges is truly the low point of the Bible. There are all sorts of things going on in the book of Judges, and there's almost nothing good or nothing redemptive, and there are no characters in it who seem to have any wisdom whatsoever. It's a book where we see people running away with their violence and their greed and their betrayal and their idiocy, bringing a human experience to a low point. And so it is that whoever arranged the books of the Bible got the book of Ruth in there just in the nick of time, right after the book of Judges. Now, the book of Ruth itself takes place in the period of the Judges. It's not as though times have changed when we see this graceful and delightful story appearing for us. Things are still bad. It starts out in the days of the Judges. And in the days of the Judges, it turns out there's this little family in Israel. The man's name is Elimelech. The mother is Naomi. The two boys are Mahlon and Chilion. You don't need to remember all those names. Just Naomi will be fine to remember her. And because there's a famine in this land, this little family decides that they need to go somewhere else where there's food. And so they journey into the neighboring country of Moab. And while they are there, they find food and they stay there for quite some time. The boys grow up and they take wives from among the Moabite women. And then the story takes a bad turn because the men of the family all die. And all that we have left is Naomi. And then she has her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. Now, Naomi is incredibly bitter at her misfortune. And she lets everybody know it. In fact, she even changes her name. The Hebrew word for bitterness is Mara. She says, don't call me Naomi anymore, call me Mara. Her very identity changes because of the difficulties that she's had in her life. Now, she might have been a bitter person before, I don't know, but she certainly is bitter. And that word appears a number of times as the book of Ruth proceeds. Now, one day she hears that the famine back home has been relieved, and she decides to return home. There will be problems there, but at least she'll be back in her own country, and she won't be living with all these foreigners. And so she decides to go home and take her chances. Her land is already long gone. Somebody else would have gotten the land by this time. And she's destitute. She has no sons. There are no men in the family to work. And so there's little chance that she can ever buy her land back or redeem it. But she decides to head back and cast herself on the mercy of people back home that she knows. Now, Orpah and Ruth, the two daughters-in-law, decide to go with her. And she, Naomi, tries to get them to go back. She says, don't go with me. Now, do you ever notice that about bitter people sometimes? They don't want to be comforted. They don't want to do anything that would make things better for them. That's the way bitterness works in our lives. We sort of wallow in it. And so Naomi says to the two daughters-in-law, you just need to go back. Don't go with me. Stay in your own country. Stay with your own family. You're young enough. Get married again. Have children. Get a life for yourself. Leave me alone. Thank you for your kindness, but my life is bitter. And just leave me alone in it. Well, Orpah does go back. But Ruth decides that she's going to stay with Naomi. And we have to ask ourselves, well, what would Ruth's motives for that be? Because Naomi doesn't sound like a person I'd want to hang around. Why does Ruth want to stay with her? Well, there are several clues as we read through the book of Ruth. First of all, she has a sense of responsibility. When she got married to her husband, Mahlon, she also accepted responsibility in her husband's family. And now that Naomi is destitute and has no one, Ruth has a deep sense of responsibility for a deep sense of loyalty. Another thing that we know about Ruth is she seems to be intrigued by the people of Israel, and particularly by their customs, their rituals, their religion, their God. She seems to be drawn to this faith that is not found in her own country. And when she hears the stories of Israel, and when she hears the songs of Israel, she is told of a heroic past, and what is foretold in those stories and songs is a hopeful future. And so there's that about Ruth, is that she's drawn to Israel's God and to Israel's people. Another thing that we notice about Ruth is her character. The scripture says that she had, the Hebrew word is hesed. She has hesed. And the New Revised Standard Version translates this Hebrew word as kindness. And she's said to be very kind. But the Hebrew word is much stronger than just kindness is a weak translation. Hesed means a fierce loyalty. Somebody who is excessively generous. Hesed means somebody who is very gracious and forgiving and does things simply out of their own goodness, not because somebody else has deserved it. And of course, hesed is the very nature of God. God is full of hesed. And Ruth, who's a child of God, who's created in the image of God, really reflects the hesed part of God. And we see that that's a part of her character. And so it is that Ruth goes home with Naomi. And they arrive back in Israel, and everybody notices immediately that Naomi is back. Naomi, you're finally returned. Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. My life has been a tragedy. And then they notice that Naomi has this foreign woman with her. In fact, all the way through the book of Ruth, she's referred to not as Ruth, the woman who's full of chesed, not Ruth who's full of kindness, not Ruth who is bringing to us a character we haven't seen in these parts. I mean, remember, we're still in the period of the judges. No, she's never referred to in these terms. She's always Ruth the Moabite, that Moabite woman. That's how they refer to her. They seem to have no inkling that Ruth is about to bring them some kindness and civility and prosperity and hope that nobody else has come up with. They seem to have no awareness of all that she has to offer them. The main thing about her is she's just that Moabite. Now, soon enough, as Ruth and Naomi have returned to Israel, soon enough, Ruth meets a man by the name of Boaz. And Boaz is a pretty powerful character in the community. He's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of pull. People respect him. He's a kind of a sexist, chauvinistic pig, but, you know, not everybody's perfect. And very quickly, Ruth and Naomi realize that Boaz is an individual who can help them. They can help him, and he can help them. So the women recognize immediately that there's a future here. So Ruth and Naomi, they begin to talk with each other, and they begin to figure out how they're going to approach things and how they're going to make things happen. That sometimes happens when women get their heads together. They figure out how to make things happen. And so they come up with a plan to be able to connect with Boaz, and it'll be good for Boaz, but it'll be good for both of them as well. And so it's at this point that the book of Ruth gets a little R-rated, or maybe X-rated, depending on who's telling the story and how many of those Hebrew euphemisms get translated into today's vernacular. But let's just suffice it to say that Ruth manages to get Boaz thinking, not just with his head, but with a few of his other body parts. And by the end of the book of Ruth, she has a husband, Naomi has grandchildren, and Naomi gets her land back. Now, the book of Ruth is as much about Naomi as it is Ruth. Naomi was a bitter person. We don't know exactly when it started, but it certainly accelerated when her husband and her sons died. And the story seems to be just another one of those stories that we've been reading about all this time in the book of Judges. One more bad situation getting worse. It just seems like we're just continuing on here. But it's in the book of Ruth that the story takes a twist that we didn't see coming. It's in the book of Ruth that life is changed because of a person we never suspected would change it. That Moabite woman. The Moabites were not people that you would have looked to for hope in the biblical story. In Judges and in Joshua and in Deuteronomy, they were people that God largely wanted exterminated. They were people who fought with the Israelites. They were the people who did things that were incredibly offensive to them. Moses had died in the land of Moab, and so Moab was known more for its death and for its immorality than anything else. It was not a place you would have expected to be a source of restoration and kindness. And yet Ruth shows more kindness than anyone else in the Bible up until this point. Nobody else up until this point is as kind and gracious as her. Not anyone from Israel can be found. When we read about Ruth and her story, it's a story about her love for God and her love for the Israelites and her love for her neighbors, her love for her mother-in-law. Ruth's story and Ruth's love and Ruth's graciousness changes not only the life of Naomi, but it will change the course of Israel's history. We will come to find out as we read through the Bible. The story of Ruth. So what's the bad news of Ruth and what's the good news? We've been doing that with all of these books of the Bible. And what's the practical application of this particular book? Well, the bad news that's found in the book of Ruth, in spite of the fact that it's such a wonderful book, it does have its bad news as well. And the bad news is the bitterness that we see in Naomi. That's the bad news of the book of Ruth. In some ways, I suppose I can't blame Naomi for being bitter. She has had a lot of loss in her life, and she's lost people that are close to her, and she's lost her livelihood. And I guess, what, she has a right to be bitter, I guess? Maybe. And we see bitterness in other places in the Bible. In fact, the Bible includes the theme of bitterness rather extensively. It first appears in the book of Genesis. You remember Isaac and Rebekah? They had two sons, twins, Esau and Jacob. And when Esau got married, he married two wives, and we are told that they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. There's nothing like somebody in the family to sort of set everybody off, is there? And we see bitterness in family situations where somebody's behavior just creates a an epidemic of bitterness. We see bitterness in the book of Exodus because it is said that Pharaoh made the lives of the slaves bitter. And we see that in our own lives when somebody who's in a position of power makes a decision and it leaves so many people feeling bitter about it. And think about what our political situation is in the United States right now. Decisions are made in Springfield or decisions are made in Washington. And there's an incredible amount of bitterness that goes out. In fact, people are so bitter, they don't even know how to take common sense action to change anything. They're just overwhelmed by their bitterness. Just like in the book of Exodus. In the book of Judges, people feel bitter because they are oppressed by their enemies. And any oppressed people, one of the biggest dangers that people who are oppressed have to face is that they will succumb to bitterness instead of creativity to figure out how to work through those situations. In the Bible, people feel bitter when they are deprived of something that someone else has. People who constantly harass and criticize others do so with a spirit of bitterness. Foolish children leave their parents feeling bitter in the Bible. In Lamentations, we can see the bitterness of sorrow, and the rituals of Lamentations are part of the process to help expel the bitterness in one's spirit. In the book of Job, Job becomes very bitter because of the problems and the losses that he has. In the Gospels, when Jesus is betrayed by Peter, when Peter denies Jesus for the third time, the Gospels tell us that Peter went out and wept bitterly. Our guilt becomes a source of bitterness for us. When Paul writes to the Ephesians, he says to them that they should put away all bitterness. And in the book of James, we are warned against that bitterness which comes from envy and selfish ambition. This bitterness is the bad news of Ruth and how Naomi seems to be so caught up in her bitterness and how destructive that is. That's the bad news of Ruth. The good news, it's what I've been talking about since the beginning of the sermon. The good news is along comes Ruth. The good news is her spirit and her spunk, her hesed, her ability to not get caught up in bitterness. She also has loss in her life. She has lost a husband as well. And she's lost her homeland and she's lost her family as she goes with Naomi. I'm surprised she hasn't lost her sanity having to live with Naomi all this time and the bitterness that Naomi has. And Ruth also would have cause for that. But the good news is that Ruth has this Spirit of God inside of her that allows her to stay centered and allows her to stay stable in the midst of other people being bitter about things. That's the good news. The book is full of good news. And it's centered in this character of Ruth. So, finally, what are the practical applications of the book? Three things, very quickly here. The book of Ruth urges us to look more carefully at outsiders as the source of our hope. Now, it doesn't matter whether an outsider is somebody who's outside of our family, or somebody who's outside of our church right now, or somebody who's not in our country, who's outside of our, it doesn't matter. The book of Ruth encourages us to take a second look at people who are outsiders, because when we find ourselves in a fix, and when we find ourselves bitter about what's going on in the family, or what's going on in a church, or what's going on in the country, the thing that God almost always does is sends us an outsider to help. Now, I'm a father of three daughters. And when Jay and I got married, there were the three daughters and there was Jay and it's hard to be the only guy in a family of four women in a mixed family. And I can't tell you how much the grace of God came to us when Nelson came into the family from the outside And when Tristan came into the family from the outside. And I've been in churches where people get caught up in whether they like what's going on and how disturbed they are and how frustrated they are. And every church that I've ever been in, the Lord has blessed with outsiders who have come in and changed the spirit of the whole church. Now, that's hard for church people because we tend to like to please ourselves rather than to be asking a question, what do we need to sacrifice so that we can be more open to outsiders? And we live in a country where we're not doing so well getting along with each other. And some of our small towns and some of our rural areas are not doing so well. We're seeing the drain of population. We're seeing the closing of places to work. And we're seeing not only qualitative decline, but quantitative decline as well. And in the history of the United States, it's always been whenever immigrants have come into an area that there has been revitalization and revival. God sends people from the outside. And the first practical application of the book of Ruth is for us to have the wisdom to recognize that the very thing we're most trying to hold off is often the very place where God is aiming to bless us. Second practical application in the book of Ruth is we see Ruth treating Naomi's bitterness with her kindness. Now, I don't know about you, but from a practical standpoint, when I'm around somebody who's bitter, it's very tempting for me to respond in kind. And if I'm tired, or if I've had too many bitter people in a row, I usually fall victim. I usually fall into that myself, into that sin. But one of the things that's a very practical point in the book of Ruth is her ability to treat somebody who's bitter with grace and with kindness and with generosity. That's just practical, to be different from the people who are bitter. And there are plenty of bitter people, and we encounter it all the time. And what a powerful practical application that we get from Ruth to see how she handles Naomi. And then the third thing for a practical takeaway, when Ruth is trying to figure out what she will do for her future, it's not just about her. She also is concerned about Naomi and Naomi's future as well. And every decision that she makes throughout this book is not just a selfish decision. Sure, it works out good for Ruth by the end of the book. But Ruth makes her decisions based not just on what's best for her, but she bases her decisions on what's best for Naomi as well. I think there's a great deal of practical wisdom in that. When we're trying to decide, do we go this way or do we go that way? What are we going to do to be able to expand the constituency so that we're not just making decisions for our own selves, but we're making decisions also on behalf of others who may have interests different from ourselves? I really was surprised that I loved this book so much and that it was so powerful, short as it is, in its kindness, in its healing, and in its hopefulness.